This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to Pod Friends. That song was Pod Friends by Will from America. And I'm Matt Scott, co-host of the Wrestling Rehab with the one, the only Mari Forth, sometimes contributor for Big Brother, Survivor, The Circle, The Challenge, you name it. And I am the host of Pod Friends, which features confessional conversations with the voices of RHAP. This Rob has a podcast universe. And for those who are wondering, Pod Friends is my way of sitting down and having conversations with all of these phenomenal people who I have a chance to podcast from, some people I haven't had a chance to connect with, and to really go behind the mic with incredible people, some who are in demand, who you want to hear from, who you know you want to hear from, and others whose stories are so powerful and who we really have yet to unearth and dive into. My very first guest, fittingly, is none other than the person who some might say walked so I could run. I would say that he's running. He's been running. He's still running. He's running the live feed updates. He's running his own Twitch channel. He's running the Taryn Show. Of course, I am talking about Taryn Armstrong. And it's really special because this is the first interview that Taryn has done like this. And the first interview that I'm doing for Pod Friends. And so it was really special for me to have a conversation with Taryn about the nerves that I felt and also just about him and his story. In this interview, we talk about Taryn's process of finding his voice and being a curious kid growing up, his childhood, his journey into the Big Brother community, and the role that, as his role within the community has evolved, the role that feedback has played for him along the way. Something else that I think was so powerful about our conversation that I can't wait for you to hear is just some of Taryn's perspective on never settling for what feels normal and this dynamic where when you don't have a path, you know, a realistic path of what your future looks like, you sort of have this white space to create your own vision of the path forward and create your own fantasy. And so I love that about Taryn. I love talking with him about his journey and diving into so much more. And as you listen, I would invite you to think about how you find your path, and especially about, you know, when you're not happy, when you're not in the place that you want to be, how do you really carve that path for the future? Taryn will help answer that question. And again, another reason why I'm just so thankful to have this podcast and so thankful to the platform that RHAP has given me for Pod Friends. And so before we dive in, I just want to invite you to, number one, follow Pod Friends on social media at Hey Pod Friends. That's at Hey Pod Friends. Like, take a second. Maybe you want to take take a second right now, you know, reach for your phone. Maybe it's across the room. Feel free to run over to your phone or open a new tab on your computer. And whether it's on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, again, we're at Hey Pod Friends, and it's a great place to stay up to date, a great way to stay up to date on all that is happening with Pod Friends as we release episodes each and every Sunday in this Survivor off season. Feel free to tag at Hey Pod Friends and use hashtag Pod Friends as well as hashtag RHAP to join the conversation and spread the word. This is about friendship. And so one thing I would say is, you know, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend, to borrow from the one and only Purple Pants Badass Bryce Isaiah, and, you know, spread the word about these really powerful stories that I'm excited for the RHAP community to begin to hear over the course of this season. And also feel free to get in touch. Email me podfriends@robhaswebsite.com. That's podfriends@robhaswebsite.com with any of your thoughts and any suggestions on who I should interview in future Pod Friends episodes. Let me know what your thoughts were on this conversation with Taryn, if there's anything in particular that resonated, and, you know, other questions that you might want me to dive into with others that I connect with within this community. In addition, I should note that, you know, you might be listening to my voice right now, but you could also watch Pod Friends on RHAP's YouTube, robhaswebsite.com/YouTube. And I would encourage you to hit subscribe and make sure you turn on that notification bell so you don't miss not only a Pod Friends episode, of course, we love that, but so you don't miss any of the great content coming out from RHAP. And, you know, you might be listening right now on the Reality TV Rehap Ups podcast feed or on the Rob Has a podcast feed. Thank you wherever you're listening, but also be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening so that you don't miss new episodes coming out. And sooner or later, we will have a Pod Friends podcast feed. So stay tuned and I will keep you up to date on that. Finally, last thing I want to say truly from my heart is, you know, it's never really a bad time to become a Rob Has a Podcast patron. You could do that at robhasawebsite.com/Patreon. And I'll share, I have been a patron for now a couple of years. And the thing I love about it is that it's a great way of, in the spirit of this podcast, diving deeper, getting to know people, interacting with people who are similarly fans of these scripted and unscripted shows that we love, and also a great way of just connecting. And so things that I love about being a patron, there are the patron Q&As, the Facebook groups, the special podcasts that come up, live events, games, other community gatherings, both virtual and in person. So become a patron for RHAP, robhasawebsite.com/Patreon, and tell them that you joined because of Pod Friends, because I sent you. But now I am really excited to give a little bit of a wrestling rehap up style introduction here to today's guest. So let me clear my throat. Making his way to Pod Friends by way of San Diego, California. He loves reading, working out, and watching things. And maybe best known for being the live feed dream. He hasn't eaten plain yogurt since moving coast to coast, and you've heard more than 1,000 hours of this man in the last year alone. He's a video producer, a podcaster, a robot, and the host of the Taryn Show, Taryn Armstrong. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Taryn Show. My name is... What? It's not the Taryn Show? Hey, Taryn. I don't know why I'm here, why you're here. This isn't the Taryn Show.
No, it's the Matt Show, right?
Ah, it's a, well, see, it could, that was the initial name. That was the first name on the list of names. But according to the branding, this is Pod Friends. Mm. And I'm actually, I will say, of all the times that I've podcasted with you, this is the one that I'm most nervous for. And I'm not exactly sure why, but maybe you could explain it to me, because you were once in my shoes not too long ago.
It's funny because that's the nervousness is usually the guest. The guest is usually nervous because when they come on to the Taran show or an interview where they're sort of maybe expected to open up, there's usually a lot of like hesitancy and nervousness surrounding it. But I think that, you know, when you start, I think the reason you're nervous about anything is because you're doing something that you're not used to. And it's something like this, it, even though it's maybe not about you, it still leaves you in a vulnerable place. And that can be a little, scary.
Wow. I love this. This is, already getting deep. We could really just turn this around now. I mean, I kind of thought I was the guest on the Taran show, but, you know, I guess we'll do it this way. I'll interview you. I could ask you how this goes. I think I have an idea of how this is supposed to go. But I'm excited, Taran, to actually dive in and talk with you, because we are both people who have something important in common. Other than the fact that we podcast with Rahap, we're actually people who love to interview people and ask questions. And I'm really excited to dive in with you because you are like the perfect depiction of what Pod Friends is all about and why I love to interview people. And it's because as much as we've podcasted together, we podcasted for The Circle last year, Big Brother, we've podcasted together, we've podcasted about Survivor. And yet there's so much more that we could dive into. So many questions I have about you as a person. So I just want to know from you, like, when you were in my shoes, beyond the nervousness, like, what was it like the first time that you did an interview, when you first interviewed Rob back in the day, not to date you or anything?
Yeah, over 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
I think that for me, there wasn't as much nervousness, because the idea behind the Taran show was something that was less nerve-wracking to me than my normal interaction with people, where it's like, podcast-wise.
Yeah.
Because when I started podcasting and I had co-hosts and everything, it was my first experience of like long-distance friendships, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where I'd never really met the people in person, and I never really had a chance to just talk to them outside of the world of podcasting or reality television. And so I always wanted an outlet to, because I always felt like, you know, in my life, when there were people that didn't know me or that I didn't know them or whatever, I always felt like if I could just sit down with them and have any conversation, just any conversation where we're both open to the conversation, like I can be friends with this person. Like I can make friends with this person.
Yeah.
But it takes that conversation. And that's like, sometimes you just don't have that opportunity. And I'm terrible at online communication. Like I just don't, it just doesn't click for me. I just don't like it. And so the idea behind like getting people onto a podcast where I can sit down and have a conversation with them for a little while was like, this is great. This is like, take the nerves away. I'm finally in my element. Yeah. And I can actually have a conversation, and I'm going to be able to like really get to know people.
And I'll say that's the beauty of recording, like we are, a little peek behind the scenes on StreamYard, because like you're trapped. You can't leave, Taran. You have to stay here this entire time. That's the beauty of it. But, you know, I think it's something else that you just touched on is the fact that like when you started the Taran show, it was a different world in a lot of ways, because I mean, I just joined Rahap as a podcaster in 2020, right? And we were in the middle of a pandemic. We were all virtual. Still, it's not weird to have virtual friends, because for the most part, our friends are virtual. But, you know, like, I'm so curious to hear from you. Like, what's it like to be on the other end of the mic, so to speak, and to be the one who's being asked the questions? I know you're someone who has shared a lot about yourself in different bits. You could pick up on a lot about Taryn if you listen to the Taryn show and all, but like, what is it actually like to be sitting here and to be interrogated by me? Are you afraid? Are you intimidated? Like what's going on, Taryn?
I in some ways I'm excited, mostly because for a long time, you know, since I started the Taryn show, people have always been like, you have to do a Taryn show. Like, and
interviewing always, yourself.
It always felt weird to me, or like have somebody come on and interview, but like, you know, I'm somebody that's very, it's very open for the most part about myself. I just like the barrier for entry is that you have to ask. And I think that, that a lot of people are afraid to ask. and so they don't. And so they don't tend to, like, they might not know me as well. But I also like it's not something I volunteer because there's like a deep sense in me that's like, I never want to be the person that like uses my own story or anything like that as a means of personal gain or anything weird or, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's like an insecurity there for sure. And so the notion of being able to sort of like talk to you, and do this, for somebody else essentially was like, okay, this is great. It's like, I'd love to like help somebody else, and do this thing. And then maybe people will stop, telling me I should promote myself in a weird way.
Well, I think that's a good point too, because I feel like, as this is a little peek behind the curtain, this isn't my first time interviewing people. It's my first time interviewing people, in this way on RHAP, which is new. And I think anytime that something's new, there are some nerves attached to it, at least for me. But, you know, the thing that's really interesting about what you're saying is that, you know, we don't have the time. We don't have the opportunities to sit down and have these conversations, and to stop and ask is a lot, because I'll admit, Taryn, you know, I'm intimidated. I was intimidated coming into this conversation, and we've spent hours upon hours having conversations on podcasts, recorded, documented, so people know it's happened. But you know, I think that that's a great point about you. And one question I have for you is, do you have a sense of where that feeling comes from? Do you feel like you're a particularly intimidating person?
It's weird that that's sort of what's happened, because I never saw myself as an intimidating person for like growing up, and I certainly wasn't. But I think that you know, for me, I think that it was through like my own personal development of, you know, finding myself and being more confident in myself. There's less of me that that like outwardly looks for, I think, like validation or like oh, I need to make sure that a person likes me. And when somebody, and I think that that's like a small thing. I think probably the primary thing is that when you know me strictly via online interaction, that's probably the biggest reason, right? Because again, I'm not somebody that like is super, I don't know if good is the word. Like, I can talk to people online. I know I like put plenty of exclamation marks to make people know that I'm not mad at them. But I'm not very proactive, in talking to people online. It's something that, you know, I've talked about it before, but it's just like, it's stressful to me to like have a bunch of texts and be like, I've got to reply, and it just feels like it never ends. And I just don't know how to deal with it, in a way that feels healthy. And so I think that it's difficult to like text me or something. But I would like to think that if you meet me in person, you know, for any sort of like extended period of time and we have a chance to talk again, like once I'm able to sit down with somebody and talk to them, that's when it's like, oh, okay, this is now something that feels right.
Yeah. And it's fascinating, because one thing you mentioned is growing up, you didn't feel like you were particularly intimidating. Even now, you probably don't feel it particularly intimidating. Again, I'm very intimidated right now in your presence. But You know, I'm so curious about just going back where your roots are, where you're coming from, and not even like step by step, beat by beat, but just kind of like, where did the seeds of this Taryn who loves to ask people questions, who loves to sit down with people, kind of come from? Like, where did that curiosity initially stem from?
It's a good question. I can definitely trace a lot of my sort of personality to different like areas and aspects of my life and growing up. The curiosity is one that I don't know. Like, I feel like it's just always been innate. I was that like very young kid who was just like constantly asking my mom questions. Like before I could read, like a truck would go by. What did that truck say? What does it say on the cereal box? What is this? And I mean, she hated it. She was, furious with me.
I was
constantly asking questions. And I always wanted to learn things. I was just like, I loved school, at that time, because it was an opportunity to learn things. And I just loved learning things. And I was always just very, very, curious.
The fact that I think that I know there are so many parallels, even in terms of how we grew up. Like, I could totally relate to asking questions, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who are listening, who tune into these types of conversations, whether it's Pod Friends, the Taryn Show, whatever it might be, are those curious people, those curious kids. But something I also think is fascinating about you, and it makes me feel kind of bad about doing this interview, is the fact that I feel like you have to, you have to pay attention. You have to piece together a lot of like what makes you, what your story is, in listening to the Taryn Show, in joining your streams. How do you think that people perceive you, or what do you think people think makes Taryn Taryn?
Well, it depends on who you're asking about. Like, are you talking about the audience? Are you talking about? Like,
I know exactly who I'm talking about. It's the listeners, it's the audience, it's the people who tune in and know you to show up reliably every day for the live feed updates during BB, the people who are tuned into the streams. Like, how do they, or what do you think they perceive you as? And do you think that's an accurate representation?
I think that the people that probably like my content the most see me as somebody that that loves to analyze things and ask questions, and I would like to think that I'm able to sometimes provide an angle of looking at things that maybe you hadn't considered before, and when you have those moments, it's like, oh, that's interesting, that's what I listened to this guy for. I think that's probably the biggest reason that people enjoy what I do. I think there's also plenty of other things. There's some people that like the idea of a robot, Taryn, mm-hmm. That's like strictly about strategy, even though that's not really, what I do. But they like the idea of it. And then there are also people that sort of like, know that that's not really what I do, and kind of just like, oh yeah, the robot thing, but I like the emotional analysis or whatever it is. I think that's I think that's a large part of what people enjoy about my stuff. And do I think it's accurate? I mean, in terms of what I hopefully provide to them, I hope it's accurate. I guess in terms of like the robot thing, or there are lots of inaccurate sort of assumptions about me. Sometimes there are accurate assumptions about me, but I'm not my full self to thousands or, whatever amount of people. Like, none of them are ever going to know, who I actually am. And I'm happy about that, I think, to a degree. I want people to know me for who I am, but I don't want to feel like, I'm, again, sort of like selling myself, or using that to get money. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to provide content. I don't want to sell my life.
Exactly. With a lot of creators, a lot of content creators and podcasters included, like, what what I feel I often see or gravitate to are the people who I kind of identify with, the people who don't necessarily sell their stories to kind of borrow from what you're saying, but the people who share those pieces of them that resonate with other people. Do you have a line between like sharing enough of yourself so people could gravitate to it versus, kind of exploiting that, I guess would be the word.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely share pieces of myself, especially, in places where I have the space to, like on Twitch. There's a lot more like free form conversation. People ask questions all the time. And, there aren't a lot of questions that I just won't answer. I give of myself there all the time, but I feel like that's more of just, a conversation. Again, it's just like the Taran show. In the Taran show as well, like I share lots about myself in the Taran show. I'm just, careful to make sure it's not about me. Despite the name, it's not. I do feel like I share a lot about myself in that way, but I don't actively try to make any content that I produce about me. I want to make it about an aspect of me, like my love for Big Brother, my love for fantasy, or my analysis of a certain thing. Whatever I can bring to a topic, and that always includes your own personal experiences, that's what I'm bringing to it. And so it's always deeply personal. But it's not what it's not is like, hey, I went out, on Friday night and, we did a bunch of stuff here and look at all this drama that's happening in my life, yeah. That's a different sort of, space.
Yeah, I mean, we might have to talk after this about starting another podcast that's about your Friday night drama, but we'll get there. And thankfully, you are not producing this podcast. I'm producing this, so it's going to be all about you, Taran, whether you like it or not. But thank you again for kind of making this space to kind of talk about yourself.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to go back a bit to piece the pieces together again of your story. Like, what was it like for you growing up, or what were you like growing up as a kid?
It was tough. It was tough growing up for me. I was pretty reserved growing up, and that I think a lot of that stemmed from just not feeling very happy or secure. When I was very little, we didn't really even have like a real home for a little while. Once we did, we were moving around constantly. I never really felt like I was able to settle anywhere. Like, we always had to move, whether it was because of money or like there was a problem with the neighbors or the landlord or a boyfriend or whatever. We were just always moving. And there was just always this notion of just like this concept of being poor, not having money, the sort of the physical realities of that, but also the like the material things, like the weight of it was like a poison. It permeated every aspect of my life, and there was just a constant worry of it, a constant reminder. There was constant complaining about it, that it was suffocating. And I never really understood how heavy that burden was until I got my first like real job out of college. I was offered an amount of money that at the time was like, what? That's, mm-hmm. I could live on that amount of money. That doesn't exist. Not for people like me. And it was like, I stepped out of Plato's cave for the first time and saw the real world. And it was that burden that I never even knew existed was lifted off of my back. When I say lifted off of my back, like it's still there, like it's still, yeah. It's hovering above my back, like the snail that will kill you, if it touches you. If you've seen that meme.
See, I haven't. And you know, as much as we might have in common, that is one difference. I don't know the snail. I've never met this snail. But you know, I will also say, I think that it's not surprising that you still have that weight on your shoulders, just because I think a lot of us, and I'm not a psychologist. Please don't at me for psychologist related things. But you know, one thing I'll say is, like, I know in just my own awareness of psychology, that a lot of what we are, how we show up today, is based in, like, childhood patterns. Some might say childhood traumas, things like that. But you know, I actually want to ask about something specific. So I mentioned piecing together more about who you are, how you show up in the world. One thing that I heard on one of the old Terran show episodes is that when you were a kid, you, similar to me, actually, were interested in being a psychologist for the other kids. What was that about? I'm fascinated because I haven't spent time thinking about this, but maybe you have.
Well, it was pretty clear to me at the time what it meant, and it hasn't really changed. But you know, when I was young and I was feeling sad, you know, the thing maybe the curiosity was always there, but maybe the thing that really, like, cemented in my life was that indulging the curiosity and the idea of learning about things did make it better sometimes. It made life more tolerable when I was able to learn things and implement those things. And so learning about psychology and about, you know, why things hurt, why people were the way they were, it always helped. And so, you know, diving deep into that, obviously, like, psychology, even liking the show Big Brother, I liked it because I was able to learn about people. And so I was really into psychology. And when I was, you know, feeling very down, the concept of, like, I would love to be able to, like, what can give my life meaning? What can, like, keep me going and make it worth continuing on? What if I could help other, what if I could help myself in this situation, like, other kids like me in this situation, help them through something like this, in a way that I'm struggling to help myself. And so the idea of being a child psychologist, stemmed from that. And you know, it wasn't ever a realistic goal for me, though. Like, it was, you know, it was kind of just like, a fantasy in my head of, like that could, you know, that in the fantasy world where I grow old, you know, because right. That didn't really exist to me when I was a kid. Like, there wasn't really a future in my head. It was mostly just like, it didn't feel like anything would ever change.
Yeah. So, like, when you were growing up and when you got to that point, you're, like, graduating high school, where did you go from there? Were you sort of directionless, or did you have at least an idea of, like, okay, here's what my next steps will be. Here's where I want to be in the next year, 5 years. What was that like for you?
So by the time I graduated high school, that was, like, the first, like, my senior year of high school was, like, the first big corner turning in my life, where I really just had to, I dived so deep into psychology and philosophy and, like, all this nonsense, just trying to, like, learn as much as I could and really, like, dedicate myself to improving and getting better. And so when I was thinking about going to college, like, the idea was mostly just, like, I can get out of here. I can escape this current reality and go into a new one. And who knows what that will be like. And my old notion of, you know, maybe I'll be a psychologist, and my love for psychology, you know, made sure that I was going to a college that had a psychology program in it, you know, so that I could try that. But again, it didn't feel realistic to me, even that, just because I knew that I didn't have the money for, like, a, you know, psychology, I, you know, it's been a long time now, but I believe it it requires more than just an undergrad degree to be a psychologist. And so the idea of like, oh, I can't afford anything beyond, you know, what I've barely managed to, you know, scholarship and loan my way into for college. So the idea of being able to be a psychologist was still like, nah, but I still wanted it there in case, right? Yeah. And then the other thing that that I loved was you know, film and TV and the idea of being a writer, something that I could do to sort of like create worlds that you know, again, to escape, that really appealed to me. And and again, because none of it felt realistic, I was just like, why not? Psychology, film, we'll go for whatever.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fascinating, because I was just reflecting on what you were saying. Like, psychology, it didn't seem like a realistic path for you to become a psychologist, and yet you were able to see this path with the direction you're going in with film and with videography. Like, was it realistic to you, or were you just so passionate about creating that content, about writing, about, you know, being a creator?
I mean, I will say it did not feel realistic to me to be a writer or anything like that either. Like nothing felt realistic to me, right? Again, until I really got my first job out of college. It was mostly just like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. And I know I need to do it because I can't stay here. So, you know, going away for whatever it was. And because I had no idea. I had no idea. And so it was less like I'm really passionate about this and less like I can see a realistic thing here, and more just could be anything. It's all fantasy to me. So I might as well just pick two things I like, psychology and film. Maybe one of them will turn out. I don't know.
I would imagine, not to put words in your mouth, but what you do today is not on the Career Center list of options. Probably not something that was so clear for you beforehand. But, you know, kind of like thinking back to before your podcasting with RHAP, because I do know a little bit about the story of how you got started with RHAP. Like, what were you doing before the point that you worked with Rob and the RHAP team?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I, you know, toward the end of college, it was sort of another like, oh, well, now what? Mm-hmm. And I've always just been somebody that I just dive into whatever I'm doing. So I was working a few different jobs at the same time. I had an internship. I had another job. I was working nights, and I was doing classes. And the internship actually panned out. They wanted to keep me when I graduated, and so that's when you know, I negotiated a salary, and I was like, whoa, I can actually make money. And I had a full time job right out of college, and to me it felt amazing. And I think, you know, a lot of the people that I was going to school with, they were moving to LA, they were like following their dreams, and I was just like, excuse me, this is a paycheck. And it was just a startup. I was just making, you know, support videos, marketing videos, just, you know, silly little things for this startup company. And it was great. I mean, it was very flexible. I was able to, you know, come in early, leave early. I was able to, you know, work from home like one day a week, which was nice. And, you know, I was just enjoying having money. I was like aggressively paying off of the loans that were like a huge burden on me. And I was saving as much as I could. And, I started, you know, doing some freelance work, and, things were going great until the company was, bought out by another company. And even though we were doing well, that parent company had like a down quarter, and they decided to just close us off. And so, pretty much everybody, lost their job, and, you know, that snail that was following me, this idea of like going back to where I used to be, I was like, oh, he's in the room. I got too complacent. So I just started doing more freelancing. I started applying for jobs when Rob put the call out for people to be on the podcast. I didn't really see it as a job opportunity. It was mostly just like that could be fun. I never in a million years thought that I would be good at it. In the Big Brother space, whenever I looked at the forums and I'd been on them, I'd seen jokers for forever, and like, nobody ever expressed the things that I wanted to have expressed. So I was like, nobody's going to want to hear my thoughts on this. But I talked my friends' ears off about this stuff, and they're like, you have to, are you kidding me? You'd be great. I was like, you're lying. But, it stuck in my head, and I had watched a couple of the other video submissions that people had sent in. They sent them in on Twitter. And I was like, oh yeah, can't do it. No, definitely not. These people are so funny and charismatic. There's no way, scratch that idea. But it was still in my head that night. And I was thinking about it, and I had remembered that in the preseason interviews for Big Brother Canada 3, they had filmed them in these, like, Rob had called them like these cheap generic hotel rooms. It was a whole big thing. And I was like, wait a minute. I just bought a bunch of like in-home production stuffs to do freelance work. I can replicate a cheap generic hotel room. I can do a parody of these preseason interviews, and I think it would be funny, and I think that would be enough to get me at least one opportunity to talk to Rob Sesternino on a podcast, which would be very cool. And I couldn't even sleep that night. I was just thinking about what I was going to do. And so the next day I did it, and I sent it in. I had a whole problem with Twitter. But right away, like, Rob liked it and retweeted it, and he sent me a message on Twitter, and he was like, I love the video. I'd love to have you on the team. And I was like, whoa. And from there.
Wow. Yeah. And it's like, just hearing that, one thing that stands out to me is what you were saying of like, they wouldn't want me. They're all these charismatic people here and fun people. I just imagine them being like really pretty and charismatic and maybe lots of makeup and great hair. That place of them, of you looking at other people and kind of seeing what they're doing and thinking of yourself, it's like, I don't know why they wouldn't want me. Is that a pattern that you've seen a lot? And kind of where has that shown up otherwise for you?
I think that, that was just like how I saw life for so long. It was always, the good things in life were for other people, and not for me. And I don't think it's something that, that plagues me, at least as much anymore. I can't think of the last time I was I can't do that. And I shouldn't have felt that way at the time. I just didn't feel like I fit in, especially in the Big Brother community. I just didn't feel like I fit in. But there was an audience for what I had to say, which was really nice. It was just insecurity. I was never like the most talkative, person. I was never like, the person that, that people would like stop and listen to. I was the person that like, if I got you one-on-one, we'd have a great conversation, but in a group setting, I don't know.
Yeah. The fact that you even mention a world where Taryn Armstrong doesn't belong in the Big Brother community is kind of mind blowing for me. And probably for a lot of people who are listening. Was the community like different at the time from what you perceive than it is now, or did you just become part of it and kind of evolve what the community looked like?
I mean, I'm sure. I think that maybe it's mostly that just like, I think the dialogue around the show has changed a bit. During Big Brother 8. A lot of these things haven't changed. Like, this stuff still exists, right? Like, People just constantly calling Eric Stein like a weasel and a rat, and like giving right. him names and making fun of everyone on the show, and just constant like negativity about the people and about like what they're doing, and very little about the game except to like bring them down. And I always just got so frustrated reading that. I was like, this, there's just no place for me in this community. I'm just gonna have to exist in my own bubble. I would still read it because I was immersed in the whole show and the world around the show. But it just didn't feel like a place where I fit in or where I belonged. And so, I think that as the discussion about the show has grown, more and more people who are less interested in being so negative about the people on the show and more interested in talking about the strategy or the more positive elements of what we're seeing have sort of, you know, come out of the woodwork or found a place to voice those thoughts as well. And so I think that it's all just kind of naturally evolved. And I was lucky enough to sort of be there, I think, at around the time it was changing.
Yeah. And I'm almost just picturing you like standing around, and I don't know if you were anything like this. I know before I podcast on Rehap that like sometimes I would be listening to podcasts because I was a fan for years, and I would sometimes just like pause it and like spend time like thinking through or even talking out loud, like whatever the situation was that was happening on the podcast, probably with you on some of the podcasts, realistically, Taryn. But like, You clearly had an idea of what you wanted to bring to the community, bring to the dialogue, the conversation. And we know how you show up now. Was there anything that kind of surprised you about, how you were able to plug into the conversations once you actually had the mic and the stream in front of you, or was it what you expected?
I mean, I was shocked. I mean, the first podcast I did, I went on and it immediately felt so much more right to me than I expected. I was very nervous about like my setup and my tech, but in terms of, you know, the conversation, what I had to contribute, I felt really good. And people were very responsive to me.
And do you remember what that first podcast was?
Yeah, it was the, it was like, Peely and, the other woman who was out first in PB Cam 3.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Yep.
Something like that. No, not Trish. But anyway,
yes.
People responded really well. And Rob was so supportive as well. Just like, he was very complimentary of me being there. And I was like, whoa, like this was, you know, I was expected to come on and it was just going to be like me being able to tell Rob, like, I love you on the show. And instead it was like, oh my God, like people really responding well to me. Like, I think he's going to want me to stay even just after that first podcast. And I was like, that's really cool. Like, I guess this is a thing now. It's just going to be a thing that I do. And that's awesome. It was surprising for sure. And as time went, I kept waiting for like people to start hating me. But it didn't really happen, too much. I mean, obviously, you know, the internet is the internet and you're always going to have people that hate you, but, I was waiting for them to start yelling at me in the way that I saw them yell at the people that played Big Brother. And it never really happened that way. And that was surprising and very good.
Yeah. It's just so interesting hearing you reflect back on this, because for me, for a lot of other podcasters, I'm sure there are many other members of the class of 2020 who are tuning in, for example, like, these feelings that you're talking about are so much more recent. It's like, oh my God, is Taryn going to hate me? Is Rob going to ever have me back? Was the joke that I tried to make that I think bombed good enough? I don't know. So, like, is there, have you heard from podcasters who've, we talked about the intimidation piece of things, but have you heard from podcasters who you've kind of been able to give advice to when it comes to this, or others who've been concerned about some of the things that you're concerned about, other than me, of course?
You know, not too often. I've had a couple of people reach out to me, you know, asking for advice, and I've given it to them, but maybe not as much as maybe you'd expect. I don't know what you'd expect, but I think that they're just like intimidated, and also it's weird because it's like I'm not sure that I would know how to give like good advice to a podcaster, because it's such, like, there are like technical things maybe.
Yeah.
I've definitely given lots of advice on like microphones and tech setups, stuff like that. But when it comes to like, how do you be a better podcaster? Like, everybody is so different in how they do things. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be like, oh, you should do it that in a way that's more like how I do it, because that's not necessarily a better way to do it. Like, everybody should do it in the way that feels right to them. And if they find success in that, then like, that's what they're bringing to it. Right. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's a personal sort of thing. And I don't know how much advice in that area, is required.
You know, sometimes people learn from your story and your example, but other times they're able to kind of take some of those transferable lessons. So it's not, you know, maybe I'm not going to do exactly what Taryn did. And you know, that doesn't make sense, because you're you, and, you know, each podcaster is who they are as an individual. But, you know, I think that the thing that's interesting is when people are able to pull out those lessons from your story. And speaking of your story, I'm not sure exactly how to get back to this, but piecing things together, I know that one of the things you credit for finding your voice is being in choir. You were in a choir?
Yeah.
What? Why didn't you tell me this before? Why didn't we talk about this on the Survivor podcast?
I don't know. It's weirdly something that it probably comes up more often than it should, right, considering I don't really sing anymore. But it was definitely a huge moment for me, in my life. It's something that happened, you know, senior year of high school, that I went into chamber choir, I was in the regular choir, because it was a required element of school, that you had to band or choir. There were no tryouts or anything. It was, they just stuck me into the tenors. And I was like, oh, I suck. I'm bad at this. Did a whole semester, as a junior, I think, just being a tenor and not being great. But I had friends that were in chamber choir, which was like the elite squad. You had to try out for it. And only the best singers got in. And I have no idea why because I'd always thought I was a good singer, because when I was much younger, I was in like a church play musical. I very, very, very vaguely remember this. I remember my mom always said that I had like a solo song at the end that made people cry. She was always like, you are so good. And who knows, right? She's a mom. But I always had this notion that like, I must be a good singer. And so I think maybe there was a part of me when I was being encouraged to try out for chamber choir that was like, maybe there's untapped potential. Who knows? So I did it. And the second I started singing, he was like, oh, why are you a tenor? You're not a tenor. You're bass. You're bass too. You're the lowest part. And I was like, oh. He was also like, and you're really good. And you know, for me, having somebody, cause I really respected our conductor. He's well known in the area for being really, really good. And a lot of people really respected him. And so to have like this authority figure that I respected, that people respected, telling me I was really good at something other than just like being smart or being good at school, which was like the thing that I had always clung to, it was the first time that I felt like, oh, this is like, I'm being, you know, acknowledged for something that I'm good at. And it was huge for my self-confidence. Because I was like, this is an identity that I can cling to. That's not this old stale, being smart thing. Cause who needs that? And it's also like, it's something that people actually care about as opposed to being smart. Right. And so, I loved what that did for me. I mean, it really helped, get me to a place where I felt like I had value and that, you know, this is something that I can do that will make people like me more. And it did. And that was big for me at the time, for sure. So, that was a big part of my life.
Yeah, you said at the time, but obviously a lot has evolved where, I mean, I don't know. Do you have any idea how many hours of like streaming and podcasting and all of that you do in a year at this point? I can't even imagine, but I feel like you're able to do the napkin math on that one.
Oh, I think there are stats that I can look at here. Hold on.
Oh my gosh. This is really a peek behind the curtain.
I've streamed on Twitch in the last roughly year were 774 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And that's of course not including any podcasting that I did, which I imagine would add up to a lot as well. So it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, and you obviously are hearing from a lot more people, which makes me wonder, like, what's the role that feedback and that response from others plays for you today?
Not much.
It's interesting how those things change, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's why like it was huge for me at the time. Almost because like it's hard to get to a place where, cause I think the place that you want to be is that you're okay being you. You don't need validation from any external source. But it's hard to get there without first having the validation. It's hard to give up something that you don't have, because there's always going to be a piece of you that's like, yeah, I don't need that, but I've also never had it. And you're always going to feel like, am I just saying that? Cause I've never had it. And so for me, the positive response that I've had on the podcast has been an opportunity for me to be like, okay, that's amazing. I don't want it. That's not something that I want to have impact my self-worth or self-value. I was conscious of how that might play out before it played out that way. So when it happened, I think I was prepared to be like, okay, I know that because I was expecting people to hate. And I was like, right, here's what's going to happen. People are going to hate me, but I'm not going to let that impact me. And the way that makes sense in my head is that if people really love me, I'm also not going to let that impact me, because I can't say the people that don't like me, they just don't know me. The people that love me, they know me. I know that that's just a rationalization and that it would never work. For me, it was just like blanket, you know, it's just, I just need to do my own thing, be secure in who I am, and the audience will respond how the audience responds. And that doesn't mean that I don't listen to feedback in terms of like the product that I'm trying to create. But when it comes to me or who I am or anything like that, or even like necessarily like how good I am at what I do, you know, it's, it's, it's mostly something that I try to keep at a distance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, to talk about myself, because these are really meant to be more conversations than anything else. Something that maybe part of where the nerves I talked about coming into this are just that response of like, I know who I am. I know how I show up in the world. I know who I want to be. And, but at the same time, you know, it's a different animal to hear from other people, to hear that feedback, or especially when it's negative feedback. But I like what you're saying about, you really have to logically too. You really have to kind of be consistent. You can't just appreciate the good and discount the bad. It doesn't really work like that. But I also love what you're saying about the fact that once you've had that validation, which I know in a lot of ways I have, and you mentioned having yourself, that you are able to kind of shut out that need for feedback and that need for validation or criticism or whatever that might be. But, you know, looking at what you're doing now and how you show up in the world, like, because you kind of cut out the that need for validation either way, like, how have you managed to evolve what you do and who you are and how you show up? Like, what's been that process of evolving your craft, I'll say, not to make this inside the actor's studio, but yeah.
I mean, it comes back to, you know, that innate desire that I've always had to learn and improve. Cause that was always a part of it, was, you know, like, learning was great. But when I started to implement the knowledge and improve myself, in high school, or for the end of high school, like that's when things started to click more for me. And I've always just been obsessed with that process. It feels good to use that knowledge in a way that improves on myself and what I'm doing and how I'm feeling. And so so for me, it's always just an internal process of you know, I've done so much work on myself that, you know, most people will never know. It's not for them, it's for me. And so the same thing kind of applies to what I do for, you know, for content creation. You know, luckily I do something with Big Brother that a lot of people respond to. But you know, I just started a YouTube channel where I'm talking about sci-fi and fantasy, that, you know, who knows if people will respond to that, but like, that's something that I do, that I have been doing all the time to myself, with myself. And so, you know, this is like another way of improving on how I write notes to myself about the things that I watch or read. And I come up with, like, this is my little review to myself of this thing. And so now people are sort of seeing in a version of that. And it's an opportunity for me to improve and refine on that process, because that's a huge part of my life. I really enjoy, reading and watching and, analyzing those things as well. It's mostly just a self-driven thing.
Yeah. It's interesting that even with the YouTube channel you mentioned, I don't know how people respond to that when I'm outside of your brain looking in, and it's so clear to me that people will respond positively to that. Not even necessarily because they love you and because they already respond well to you and value your voice and like they show up for you, Taryn, but even more because you have an approach where you're like, you have a healthy way of processing feedback. You have an approach where you're more consistent than, and probably most people on earth, but more consistent in a lot of ways. And consistency is a huge way of moving any kind of creative project forward. And you've shown that it's worked in other ways. And so to me, it seems clear that like YouTube will pan out for you, but like, do you have any idea where that kind of where that voice comes from that says, like, I don't know if this will work out, or I don't know if I'm going to be able to make this work.
I think it comes from, like, just trying to be realistic, I think. It's mostly just like I know from experience at this point that, you know, there are things that work and that don't work. There are things that I love that people don't respond to. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that I don't think that what I did wasn't valuable. Like when I talk about like a sci-fi fantasy YouTube channel not working out, you know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't think that diminishes its value in any way to myself. It's mostly just like, you know, if I throw this thing against the wall, does it stick? Great. Does it not stick? Okay, that's also fine. I'll throw something else and hope that sticks. Because it's that bit is all just about, you know, being able to continue to do things I love that also make money for me to survive, right? Mm-hmm. And whether or not it makes money doesn't mean that it's not a success in my eyes. It just means that it's not something that I might continue to outwardly do. I'll just more inwardly do it because more people aren't interested. Or maybe I need to tweak it in a way that allows people to respond to it more. It just depends on that. But I think that the idea of whether people will respond to it or not is not necessarily a judgment on the value of the thing itself.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think that's where it comes from.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fascinating to also just see the process of like, well, just because I'm great at this thing, or just because I've succeeded in this way, this is exactly what Taryn said, people. You could roll back. He said, just because I'm great at this thing. Just because you are great at certain things or successful in certain ways, you have to kind of stay humble and keep your feet on the ground rather than kind of losing yourself in that. And I think that's an important lesson. Kind of to kind of get a little bit more technical, I'm so fascinated, and I'm sure a lot of people are so fascinated specifically about how you show up when it comes to like live feed updates and literally showing up every consistently over the course of the Big Brother season. But like, what is your life like over the course of a Big Brother season? Like what's a day in your life like to start?
I mean, they're very different. It depends on sometimes what's happening. Being somebody that covers the live feeds is kind of like being on call 24/7. Because if something goes down, I'm out and about, then I've got to be like eyes glued to the phone, like, oh, sorry, I've got things. Most of the time there are obviously things that are important enough that I will be like, all right, I'm just going to have to catch up later. But I posted a picture of myself at a wedding one time when, you know, something was happening on the live feeds, and I was literally just at a wedding on my phone, like, oh my God, Tommy's telling them about Christy. And so that's, you know, that's part of it. To a degree, that was life anyway. Like I was always interested in what was happening. There wasn't as much urgency to always be on top of it, before I was a podcaster, but it's something that, like anything you care about, if information comes out or new news, yeah. Oh, this is interesting, I'm going to look at this later. So, you know, there's that angle of it. And then, you know, I'm lucky enough that it's something I am really passionate about. So there are times where, I just get sucked into that passion and I'm just all in, and I'm just like I want to be consuming every bit of what's happening and figuring out what's going on and talking about it. And then there are other times where it is much more down to discipline, this is what needs to happen. People are, you know, relying on me, or, you know, people are expecting me to know things or to be here. And so discipline is something that I had to work on a lot, when I was improving myself, Because I couldn't rely on passion or like the desire to want to do something. Cause there was like, there's a greater desire to want to do something. There's this sort of nebulous idea of like, oh, I would like to get fit. Right. But every morning, when you're working out, you don't have the desire to work out. You have a desire to get fit, but not to work out. And so, for me, I had to develop a discipline, which is, okay, this has to happen today. This has to happen now. And you know, there's of course still flexibility, here or there, but maintaining that discipline is something else that makes me happy. It's like little things that I'm able to do and fulfill that make me feel like I'm succeeding at my goals. In some ways I'm able to sort of rewire my brain to reward myself for doing things I don't want to do by, making them little steps on a bigger journey. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. And it's, you know, everyone has to find their motivation. Like what's the thing that's going to push them to the place that they want to be, or, you know, what they want to accomplish. When you're not working out, when you're not streaming, when you're not podcasting, when you're not singing in the shower, because I'm sure you're still hitting those notes that you were at the end of that that musical back in the day. Like, what are you doing? What are you reading? I know you talk a bit about like what you're listening to otherwise, but like what occupies or what excites you most in your quote unquote free time, which for a lot of us is for a lot of us, your free time. Let me try to say this the right way. Your free time is our free time, but our free time is not your free time. I hope that people make sense of that. My free time is spent watching reality TV, but yeah, like that wasn't confusing at all. This is my first time interviewing someone for Pod Friends. Thank you very much. But yeah, like what's your free time looking like, Taryn?
It varies. Yeah. When you're not working out, when you're not, you know, podcasting or anything like that. It's like, yeah, when is that? But you know, it is, I read a lot. That's one of the reasons why I started the YouTube channel is because, this is a huge part of my life. I read so much and I have no outlet for it. Because, it's so hard to find people to talk about, books or anything like that. But I read a lot, primarily sci-fi fantasy. Primarily fantasy, mostly because I just fell in love with fantasy. You know, when I was growing up, I read The Wheel of Time, and I loved it, and I loved A Song of Ice and Fire, and I loved, all kinds of different fantasy series. And I love how large and epic and long they are, how long you get to spend with the characters, the time you spend with characters in a long series. It can't be replicated in anything else that doesn't spend that much time. And fantasy is one of the only genres that spends that much time on, specific characters, that doesn't like reset them every time, like a procedural kind of series. So that's really what I love about fantasy. And it's taken me a while to learn that that's what I love about fantasy, but, it is. So I read a lot of fantasy. I watch a lot of shows, movies. You know, I look at it like I'm learning things. I'm learning more about the fantasy genre. I'm learning more about writing. I'm learning more about shows and what's happening. And, you know, I have large lists of books and shows and movies that I want to watch. I check them off when I watch them. I rate them. I analyze them. And it feels like I'm accomplishing something, even though I'm just consuming a thing. And so I do a lot of that. And then, you know, there's also like, especially now that I have, you know, more means to do so, like I want to make sure that I am enjoying as much of my life as I can. That's part of the reason why I moved to San Diego, is to be able to sort of, you know, the sun is out most of the time now. Like I get to be outside and go on hikes and, climb more and just experience more of the things that I like to do outside of, you know, my own brain, physical things, because I really enjoy doing physical things. And just making sure that I never take for granted, where I am and how I've gotten here, to make sure that I'm taking advantage of the time that I have and, enjoying as much of it as I can.
Yeah. Speaking of your move, it was a big move. There aren't much further. Well, there are some further moves beyond the continental United States that you could make. But I mean, you went from one edge of, and actually one of the extremes in terms of the weather, all from Boston all the way over to San Diego. Like, that's a huge move. And you mentioned doing that to find more joy in life. But like, more broadly, what motivated that? Because I would think, and I imagine a lot of people would think, that it takes a lot to motivate someone to have such a drastic shift in, you know, where they're living and what their life is like.
I get this question a lot, and it's always like I wish I had a better answer for you. It really is just like, it didn't require a lot for me. It had better weather, you know, like, maybe it comes back to like the self-improvement thing, but, yeah. I never want to settle for what feels normal. That was a huge part of learning and trying to learn things when I was younger, was that a lot of like accepted norms didn't make sense to me, didn't apply to me. And I quickly came to question a lot of accepted things. And so, I was always somebody that was like, okay, but you've always done it that way, but why? What if we tried it a different way? And so I've never been super stuck to just like, oh, well, you know, people say that's an extreme thing to do. Like, okay, but why? Is it for me? Because it doesn't seem like it. And so for me, it was just like, you know, I know I don't want to stay here forever. I don't like the winter. It's not fun. And if I could like when I bought my TV, I was like, what's the best TV? I'm sick of, I watch a lot of TV. I'm sick of like, what's the best value TV? I'm sick of like, what's the best TV for, no, what's the best TV? And I was like, okay, never mind. Let's wait a few years. Then I eventually got the best TV. Right. And so for me, it was the same thing. I was like, where's the best place to live? Where is it? I did a ton of research. I had been to San Diego. I loved it. I looked up all kinds of weather patterns, averages. I looked up, different reviews of like what do people like living here? And consistently San Diego is very high on everything. I looked up lots of videos of people who lived there. And I decided, you know what? San Diego is the one I want to try. As soon as I have the means to do this, I have to try and see if it's for me. Because the longer I wait, the harder it's going to be. So I have to go for it. Maybe I'll stay here forever because I love it, because I do, or maybe I'll try somewhere else at some point. But I never want to just be stuck somewhere because that's just how it's been. I want to make sure that I'm again, like, you know, achieving the most that I can and, getting the most, that I can out of life.
Yeah, it's interesting to like be here talking with you about this, because like, as someone who loves to like connect with creators and people who are building things in some way, one way or another, I almost imagine that someone who's listening, or the people who are listening, there are many people who will be able to relate to you in different aspects of your life. But it's also really clear that there is a ton of intentionality, a ton of discipline in how, like, in how you've gotten to where you are today. Do you have we were talking about fantasy earlier. Do you have like a fantasy of where you see your life going? Or do you have an idea of where you're going to be in some amount of time? And I ask that especially considering the fact that, as you mentioned, there was a point where you didn't really have that realistic vision of what you could be or where you would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's still just like, I was talking to Kevin Martin about this recently too. Like, where like his goal is to get to a point where he has enough money that he doesn't have to work to live anymore, right? And I would say, you know, that would also be my goal. I'm not as close to that goal as he is, unfortunately. But I think that's, you know, that I would love to, and cause where I'm at right now is that I'm very fortunate enough to be in a position where I would love to do what I'm doing regardless of whether or not I made a living off of it. Luckily, making a living off of it allows me to do as much of it as I do. And if that just continued indefinitely, I'd be fine. I'd be happy. I really enjoy my life. But knowing that it's possible that all this could end, Big Brother could be canceled. You know, people could just get bored of me or whatever, right? Like that's the reality of the industry that I exist in. You know, not everyone is able to do this forever. And so if that happens, I may have to go back to a different kind of job that I don't enjoy as much. And that would suck. So really like the primary thing is to just, do what I can to make myself stable enough to the point where I can just continue to do what I want to do in my life and not be, you know, stuck in the, hell of capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, not only are stuck in that hell, but feel like they are. And I know that we talked a little bit about advice and how challenging that could be, but, you know, thinking of someone who is one of your listeners or viewers who tunes into you, like, is there advice that you have for them to kind of get to this point where they kind of throw out the rule book and decide to follow their own path and kind of, you know, what their heart is telling them, as you have?
I mean, for me, it was that you do have to just sort of, I went for it. Right. But I was also realistic about it. I got another full-time job shortly after I started podcasting. And I kept that job for a long time. Or at least it felt like a long time. And because I didn't feel like it was a realistic thing to be a podcaster. Like I wasn't somebody that was like, I just nailed that first podcast. This is it. This is what I want to do. I felt that way. I felt like it would be amazing if this is what I could do for the rest of my life. But the idea that was possible was completely out of my head. But even though it felt impossible to me, it didn't mean that I wasn't going to try. And I think that's what saved me. When I was a kid as well, even when I felt like things were out of my reach, I still tried anyway. And that's probably because success was out of my reach always. And I just always was trying, and the trying was the reward in itself. So for me, it was just about trying, just continuing to try, leaving options open for lucky things to happen to me. And that's what happened. I got lucky and I was able to do this for a living. But it doesn't mean that, you know, you necessarily should just go all in unless there's something that, you know, you that requires you to. And, you know, maybe it is worth that gamble at times. I've talked to so many people who could probably give much better advice than me on this subject, because a lot of the people that have been on reality TV are the kinds of people that that did just go in and you know, talking to Kevin, talking to other people that have found success. So many of them talk about, you know, even though people were discouraging me or I felt discouraged or whatever, I always felt like I was destined for something special, that I could achieve what I wanted to achieve if I just worked hard enough, whatever it was. And like for them, like that vision, allowed them to push through whatever blocks they had, and they were able to take massive risks, and those risks paid off. But that was never me. I never saw those as realistic, things. I just was like, wouldn't it be great? It was almost like, wouldn't it be great if I won the lottery? So I bought a lottery ticket every day. Like I was just like, I just continued to work toward the option of something happening for me. And I worked very hard, to make that happen. Knowing that it probably would never happen. And I was okay with that. And I just got lucky and it did. So, you know, don't listen to me. I mean, you know, do what works for you, right? Like, because there is so much luck, you know, that goes into this sort of thing, but really just like do what makes you happy. Cause that's what made me happy at the time. The effort, the trying. I think that the most advice I could give you, and I apologize that I'm a little all over the place on this one, but the most advice I could probably give you is if you're not happy doing what you're doing, you should change it. You should change it so that there's some light at the end of the tunnel, some kind of thing that you are working towards, something that makes you happy, that makes you feel like you're on a path that is not just endlessly bleak, right? Whether that's a really small thing that you're able to do or a big thing that you're able to do, go for that. Go for whatever you think can make you happy in the future, or even in the present. Because, you know, if you don't, then, you know, it's going to be a lot harder to get unstuck.
I love that advice. And one thing I would say too, just reflecting on what you're saying about being lucky is, so I, you know, one book that I finished reading actually reread, pretty recently was Winning Conditions by Chrissy Hofbeck, of course, from Survivor, Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. And it's so fascinating because I got to this one chapter, I think it's chapter 8, and it hit me at the right point where I was just so amazed that I was reading about this when I did, because I'd been thinking a lot about luck in my life, in my career. And one thing that Chrissy talked about is that people often say, you know, you're so lucky. And they look at successful people and they attribute their success to luck, when luck is part of the reality there. But there's also diligence. And I would encourage anyone who hasn't checked out Winning Conditions to check it out, because, you know, as Chrissy says, incredibly successful people are diligent. They spend time connecting with people. They spend time putting their time and their energy into building relationships that advance their lives and their careers. And I think you could kind of take that and look at your path, Taryn, and see, you know, the places where, sure, there's luck for everyone, but also even more, it's so clear and so evident the diligence that's gone into, you know, your path and your story. But thinking about your story, probably my last question for you, I'm so curious, like, if your life were a book or documentary, Taryn, what would the title be and why?
This is the worst question for me. I have so bad at titles.
No, Taryn, turn it around. I'm pushing you. I want this for you.
Oh man,
you could do this. I believe in you. Yes. As you think about this title, Taryn, one thing I'll also point to is that I think it's fascinating, the things that we see and the things that other people could see. There are probably a million titles that came up as we went along, but you know, I would encourage folks to go back to listen, to pick those out, because there's a lot that comes up. But do you have something for us, Taryn? Do you have a book or documentary title?
Not really. I mean, it's hard. Titles are hard.
That's a great title. That isn't a bad title. And I think actually, like, the trouble with finding a title, it sounds like it's a reflection of a bit of where you are. Like, there's a lot of how you're showing up in the world now, where I could tell you, as someone who's not you, that you know you're writing your story every day, you're creating that, and you know you're kind of I had a boss that used to say, like, with social media, with streaming, with podcasting, that we're kind of like writing these real-time autobiographies. And so, Taryn, you don't need a title. Just let the way that you show up speak for yourself. I think that works. But titles are hard, and I like that as a title.
Yeah, I feel like the thing about a title for an autobiography or a document or whatever is that you kind of need, like, unless the title is like the documentary of Taryn Armstrong, right? Because like, I'm so uber famous that people care just about me. The point of something like that is to craft a narrative, right? Is to pick some aspect of my life and make the documentary about that. So I think you'd have to find, like, what area of my life you'd want to focus on and make the point of the documentary, right? And then through that, you would find the title.
I think that's maybe the most Taryn answer, which is kind of cool and impressive. Well, thanks, Taryn, for taking the time out to do this. And any final words for me and for anyone who's tuning in?
Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring, and for being curious. I think I love that you're doing this, Matt, because I want there to be more spaces for people to be vulnerable and to share their stories. Because I think that it's so important to have conversations that aren't just social media or texting or whatever. Because I do think that's, and I in some ways I hate that I've become this person, but so much is lost through that process. And I feel like it's a good thing. You are contributing to a more empathetic world, and I think that's commendable. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, all I can say is right back at you, Taryn, and thanks again. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Pod Friends. I hope you really enjoyed my conversation with Taryn. I know I really enjoyed it and gained a lot from it. I learned some new things about Taryn, and so I hope you did too. And if there's anything that really stood out or resonated with you, I would invite you to follow along. You know, tweet me at Matt Scott GW on social media, and also follow along at Hey Pod Friends, where I'm so curious to your thoughts. Email me at podfriends@robhasawebsite.com. Before signing off, I just want to give a special thanks, number one, to Will from America for the theme song for Pod Friends, and also to Scott St. Pierre for being sure that this gets out into the world, to Hannah Litsky, Tricky Rice, Sam Moore, and everyone behind the scenes at Rob Has a Podcast, RHAP, and of course to Rob Sesternino, the man behind the podcast. Thank you, Rob, for believing in me, giving me the platform, the opportunity to be here and do something that I have loved to do for 5 years now. But now with RHAP, with this community, with this network, I'm so excited to dive in, to go behind the mic with more people over the course of this journey. And I'm really thankful for each and every one of you who's listening, who's on that journey with me. Looking forward to being in touch and looking forward to becoming even better pod friends.